This is a download of Farming Today from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to www.bbc.co.uk. The presenter today, Sybil Rusco.
Good morning. Is it time to use EU law to cut milk production and halt the dairy crisis?
This is a voluntary instrument and its use depends ultimately on producers and is now genuinely in the hands of dairy farmers who may, if they so wish, join forces and collectively decide to reduce production.
But first, if you're a veg grower like me or a gardener, you'll know the damage slugs and snails can do. Imagine, though, what it's like for farmers with acres of crops to protect. Marauding mollusks chomping through your fields can cost a fortune in lost seedlings. But now researchers have found that smell may be a better solution than slug pellets. Scientists at the universities of Plymouth and Southampton think slugs and snails choose what to eat via their dislike of a smell rather than taste. Andrew Dawes went to Plymouth to meet lead scientist Dr. Mick Hanley and one of his students assisting with the testing, Ryan McClory.
What we have here is our olfactory kit. We put the snail in one end of this glass Y-shaped tube that we have in front of us. So I'm putting the two plant samples. The snail will then be able to make a preferential choice. So yeah, it's just...
So in essence, you've got something that looks a bit like a lettuce.
And that's it.
Ragwort.
Ragwort, yes. So just lock the glass jars so they're airtight. We're now going to, after this, pump an airflow through the jars. And we're just putting the snail at the end of the tube there.
We've come into a different part of the building and Dr. Mick Hanley has joined me. What were you trying to set out to prove?
The initial impetus for this research came about during my PhD when I was looking at mollusk feeding preferences for different grassland species, and a very simple experiment using ragwort, which is highly toxic to most herbivores, and another species showed that slugs and snails tended to avoid ragwort without even tasting it, which got me thinking there was some kind of smell cue that the mollusks were homing in order to make their foraging decisions. For plants, they're continually releasing what we call volatile organic compounds, and that's a series of different compounds. Terpenes, which are the smells we get from pine, from eucalypt, from mint, very aromatic. And there are another group of compounds called green leaf volatiles, which are more familiar when we, say, cut the grass. It's that fresh, grassy smell. And what we discovered for the least favoured cultivars of oilseed rape was that they tended to have volatile profiles that were dominated by the green leaf volatiles, the ones that we get when we cut the grass.
What's the next step?
Well, the next step is really to determine in field conditions, because we've only done this in the lab, whether or not we could apply mixtures of these compounds in realistic field relevant doses economically to deter slugs and snails from feeding on oilseed rape seedlings, or perhaps look at ways of breeding into existing cultivars the capacity for seedlings to naturally produce these volatiles on their own.
Could you see a point arriving whereby the need for molluscicides would disappear?
It's entirely likely we could get to that point, possibly within a decade. And we might even be able to use volatiles produced by something like ragwort to defend common crop species like oilseed rape and wheat.
Dr. Mick Hanley harnessing smell to fight the slug. Scottish farmers have got an apology over EU farm payment delays from the new Rural Economy Secretary, Fergus Ewing. Mr. Ewing said he understood the anger, frustration, hardship and cost when he spoke for the first time at Holyrood. He said, and I quote, "We are sorry and we are fixing it." It follows a damning report from Audit Scotland, which said the IT system had left a £400 million hole in the country's rural economy. Now, this week on Farming Today, we're looking at TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, a deal that aims to reduce trade barriers between the EU and the United States. Talks have been going on since 2013 and have hit various stumbling blocks along the way. Well, today we have an exclusive interview with the US Acting Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, Michael Skouse. Our reporter Anna Jones met him in Washington, D.C., and he says it's time for the EU to have a rethink on its opposition to GM and biotechnology.
If you look at the studies that have been done, these products have been around now for 20 years. We know that there's been many studies done by the European Union. All of the studies have shown that these products are, in fact, safe. And it's time that we start looking at these products for what they actually can do. We're using these products to improve the environment. Use less water, use less insecticides and herbicides than have been used in the past. The products that can now grow with more heat tolerance, or products that can be produced where we've had saltwater intrusion in areas of the world where there's been a rise in the sea levels. And then you look at these products and what they can do for human health. Golden rice is a really good example that would provide vitamins to young children who are suffering from a vitamin deficiency in parts of the world that has an impact on their eyesight. So there's many areas where we can use the biotechnology to, again, improve the environment and improve human health.
The issue is that's very much the American perspective, and the European one is very different, and there are red lines in the sand here. One thing the EU said they will not move on at all is hormones in beef. That's raising beef animals with growth promoters, which is a practice used here in the US. And they are not for moving on that, and many other issues indeed. Have you accepted those red lines on this side?
Well, I'm not at the negotiating table, and I'm not one of the negotiators, and there are, again, that's, you know, one issue of many that we're going to have to sit down and have that honest conversation about what's going to be accepted by the United States, what's going to be accepted by the European Union.
Flipping it round to the US side, there is one key point that the EU really needs a decision on, and that is the current regulations, TSC regulations or scrapie regulations, which is the reason why British lamb is currently banned in the US. It's been suggested to me by contact here in Washington DC from the European Union that negotiations can't move on until there is a commitment from the US to relax those regulations. What do you say to that?
Well, again, we're looking at protecting not just our consumers, but our livestock industry here in the United States. The same for the European Union countries. They want to make sure that they're protecting their consumers as well as their livestock industry. We look at all of the issues and try to base our decisions on sound science going forward, which is the
but
same.
There hasn't been an outbreak of scrapie for a very long time in the EU.
Granted, that's true, but we're still looking at basing all of our decisions on the science. What does it take to protect our industry?
These negotiations sound like a complex game of chess and checkmate, and it's almost like maybe the food safety side is slightly aside from the need to not want to show your hand. So will it come down to the point of going, okay, we'll give you the scrapie relaxation on the rules if you give us the allowance to send some beef with growth promoters into the EU? Do these become playing cards to use later at the crucial point of the negotiation?
Well, again, I'm not one of the negotiators, but I have a great deal of faith and confidence in our team at the United States Trade Representative's office, as well as our negotiating team here at the Department of Agriculture. And I think all of us are looking for our negotiators to come home with the very best deal possible for agriculture and all of our producers.
U.S. Acting Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Michael Skouz. Now, if you're listening most mornings, you'll know that here on Farming Today, the global dairy crisis caused by too much milk and low prices has dominated our programmes for the last 2 years. Last week, the EU Farm Commissioner, Phil Hogan, said farmers must take responsibility for the continuing unsustainable increase in production. Speaking in the European Parliament on Thursday, he said member states could use Article 222, a special EU mechanism that would allow producers to restrict milk production.
This measure is part of a comprehensive and broad-ranging response and can play a significant role. It encourages action towards greater market balance in the dairy sector. In order to encourage use of this tool as an effective contribution to the crisis, I have met with Copa Cogeca and the European Dairy Association, and I will discuss the issue again with Copa Cogeca this week. This is a voluntary instrument, and its use depends ultimately on producers, and is now genuinely in the hands of dairy farmers who may, if they so wish, join forces and collectively decide to reduce production.
Phil Hogan pointing out that it's down to member states to decide whether to implement a cap on milk output. Here in the UK, the government has said it's unlikely to support such a move because it would harm competitiveness and penalise efficient dairy farmers. And yesterday we heard from Gloucestershire dairy farmer Andrew Cousins, who's trying to beat the dairy crisis by increasing his herd and producing more milk.
When you look at it on a global terms, you've got to bear in mind we're talking of billions and billions of litres. This is one of the farms that intends to be producing milk in the future. And what we do here isn't going to make a terrible amount of difference to the global situation. You've got to bear in mind, the only thing we produce here for sale is milk and cull cows and calves. We can't diversify into anything else to make a profit. To diversify, I need to have capital to invest. I haven't got that capital. We're either a full-time dairy farm or else we get out of it all completely.
Well, Sean Davis, the National Farmers Union Chief Dairy Advisor, says Article 222 has come too late and farmers are starting to control the crisis themselves.
When the Commissioner introduced the measure back in March, very few countries in Europe, from a member state angle, thought it was the right measure to bring in at the time. And actually, to date, no producer organisation or co-op has utilised the measure, mainly because we're already seeing in the UK and in other countries across Europe production pull back. So to an extent, the measures come too late. We are seeing farmers react to the market, react to the low milk prices, without the need of this supply management. Now, here in the UK, the measure can only be used by POs, farmers that have come together officially as producer organisations and co-ops. We have only two POs in the UK at the moment recognised in Direct Milk and Dairycrest Direct. And we have a few co-ops. Obviously, we have Arla, we have First Milk and a few other ones such as South Carnarvon Creameries and a few others in Wales and OMSCO, of course. Now, those co-ops, some of them have brought in ways of managing supply. So First Milk have an A and B contract system or payment system. So they found their own ways of managing supply.
So what do farmers think when you've got the EU Commissioner, Phil Hogan, saying that farmers have got to take responsibility for the continuing, and these are his words, the continuing unsustainable increase in production?
Well, I'd say in the UK, production has been falling since February. We're 2.3% down on our volumes last year. So we have seen milk prices drop since November 2013. Farmers have now reacted to that milk price drop. Volumes are falling, but it takes time. And that's something that's quite clear. You know, farming is a long-term business, as Andrew clearly said earlier on. It takes a long time to change production to a great extent. But we are seeing in the UK production pullback. We're seeing it happen across Europe to an extent and across the world. So, you know, things are coming back into balance. And, you know, from our perspective, this measure has come in too late. What we need is to look at, you know, the causes of the current situation, look at the Russian embargo on dairy products going to Russia, look at trying to encourage consumption, encourage more exports of product out of Europe. Those are things we need more focus to be put on rather than actually looking at short-term measures that in the long run could damage competitive, resilient dairy farming in the EU.
NFU dairy expert Sean Davis, and let us know what you think. Do you favour restricting milk production, or are farmers beginning to beat the crisis themselves? Send us an email to farming.today@bbc.co.uk, or our Twitter handle is @BBCFarmingToday. I'm Sybil Ruscoe, and producing in Bristol today, Lucy Taylor.